So what do you have planned for the rest of your life? If you're at or approaching middle age, it's worth thinking about. Advances in health are contributing to longer lives for many of us, which is great news, but it means we may need to rethink our careers, our finances, our relationships, and our fitness in order to truly enjoy those extra years. Here with some guidance is Deborah Whitman, the AARP's Chief Public Policy Officer and former Staff Director for the Senate Special Committee on Aging. She joins us to share five big ideas from her new book, The Second 50, Answers to the Seven Big Questions of Midlife and Beyond.
I'm Deb Whitman. I've spent my career working to make the lives of older Americans healthier, happier, and more financially secure. I wrote my book, The Second 50, to answer critical questions about aging. I interviewed experts, conducted surveys, and spoke with people all over the country. Some of what I learned surprised me, and may even surprise you too. I'm going to share five key insights with you. The first is, our zip codes, more than our genetic codes, determine how long we'll live. Americans live on average just 76 years. Our lives are shorter and less healthy than people in many poorer nations. I was surprised by how much where we live affects how long we will live. In fact, people who live in the longest lived county, Summit County, Colorado, live 20 years longer than in the shortest lived county, Oglala Lakota County in South Dakota. Residents of West Virginia develop chronic health conditions two decades earlier than people in Wisconsin. These disparities are linked to what we call the social drivers of health. And social drivers are things like education, income, access to healthcare, and yes, zip codes. They influence 60% of the differences in our longevity. And the rest is split about equally between our genes and the healthcare we receive. Not surprisingly, having a higher income equates with longer life. But I was shocked to learn that men in the top 1% of wealth outlive men in the bottom by 15 years. There are disparities by race and ethnicity, too. Asian Americans live 20 years longer than Native Americans, whose life expectancy is just 65 years of age. We can help people live longer and healthier. And much of it has nothing to do with costly, high-tech medical treatments. Research shows that differences in state policies can drive healthy longevity. And it's not just the most obvious laws, like higher tobacco taxes, which reduce smoking, but also policies related to minimum wage and paid family leave. This gives me hope that we can create environments that support all of us to live healthier and longer. The second, it isn't just what we eat and how many steps we take. There's a lot we can all do to improve our health and extend our lives. I'm sure you've heard about the five healthy habits: a good diet, exercise, a healthy body weight, not smoking, and not drinking much alcohol. People who do all five gain 12 to 14 years free of major medical problems such as cancer and heart disease. But every little bit matters. Even if you have only one of these habits, you gain two healthy years. But you may be surprised by how much mindset and relationships impact our health and longevity. Here's what Harvard epidemiologist Dr. Becca Levy found. People with the most positive perceptions of aging live more than 7 years longer than their peers with the most negative attitudes. The positive thinkers had fewer strokes and heart attacks. They had higher physical functioning, and when they did get sick or injured, they enjoy a shorter recovery time. While researching my book, I talked to many older people about their lives and their attitudes around aging. The ones who are thriving, even with a health or financial challenge, embraced a positive mindset. They focused on gratitude and maintaining a sense of purpose. I spoke with Edmundo, a 68-year-old retired worker. 20 years before, he had been diagnosed with congestive heart failure. That's when he got proactive about his health. He was also a music lover with a home studio, and he started DJing. He told me, "You either come to terms with it and try to live your best possible life, or you don't." Edmundo was determined not to live his life terrified. In fact, he told me he had even outlived several of his cardiologists. The second big health enhancer is relationships. healthy relationships are linked to three things critical to good health: better immune functioning, lower blood pressure, and lower levels of inflammation. Researchers from the Harvard Study of Adult Development found that the best predictor of physical and mental health for people in their 80s was not cholesterol level or blood pressure. It was having good relationships back in their 50s. Next, cognitive change is normal as we age, but cognitive decline is not inevitable. Most of us worry about losing our memory as we age. We fear that everyday lapses, like forgetting where we left our keys, are signs of trouble. It turns out that we are vastly overestimating the likelihood of getting dementia. About half of Americans predict they'll get it, yet only 15% of people between 75 and 79 have even mild cognitive impairment. What's more, our chances of getting dementia have actually declined over the last several decades or so. That's probably because of improvements to nutrition, healthcare, education, and lifestyle. We have strong evidence showing steps we can take to support our brain health and lower our risk of dementia. Researchers in The Lancet identified 12 modifiable risk factors that account for about 40% of dementias worldwide. Some of these, such as air pollution and inadequate education, need to be addressed by the government and the private sector. But many relate to individual behavior. Adopting those five healthy habits I mentioned earlier could help lower our risk of dementia by up to one-third. And other habits can also help, like adequate sleep. People who sleep 7 to 8 hours a night are significantly less likely to develop dementia than those who sleep for 5 or 6 hours. Nurturing relationships and staying socially active also lowers the risk, as does strengthening the muscles of our brain. We can also challenge ourselves with activities that involve memory, attention, and reasoning, such as learning a musical instrument or solving problems at work or while volunteering. One last point. Some cognitive faculties actually improve as we age. Our grasp of meaning and the connection between ideas and our ability to think constructively all improve over time. We also tend to become more emotionally resilient. In other words, our brains continue to change in our second 50, but not all of that change is decline. My fourth point is that older workers are a boon to, not a drain on the economy. When I was a kid, the norm for many Americans was school in the early years, then a few decades of work, followed by retirement. But the reality is very different today. Thanks to rapidly changing technology and longer working lives, the skills we gain when we're young often become outdated. But there are far too few opportunities for lifelong learning. Working while retired has become a new norm, and many Americans will never be able to fully retire. Older people can feel caught in a bind. Policymakers tell them to just work longer. Some younger workers feel older workers are taking their jobs. But the fact is, helping older people stay in the workforce benefits individuals, employers, and the economy. Among older workers, being at work slows cognitive decline and keeps them socially engaged. Employers with a multi-generational workforce see more innovation and higher productivity both in younger and older workers, and turnover goes down. Older workers help to grow the economy. Research shows that age discrimination pushed older Americans out of the workforce, and that cost $850 billion in lost wages, salaries, taxes, and consumer spending. Now, not everyone can keep working indefinitely. People who have been in physically demanding jobs may not be able to work far into their latter years, and we have to find better ways to support them. For those who want or need to keep working, we must address the barriers they face, such as outdated skills and caregiver demands. And age discrimination is a real thing. It's the last ism that needs to be fought. About half of Americans are laid off or pushed out of jobs at least once after turning age 50. In the changing work landscape, all of us, workers, employers, and lawmakers, need to reimagine what it means to earn and learn over a lifetime. Lastly, we can and must make it easier to age well in America. The programs that support us as we age desperately need updating. Social Security hasn't been touched in 40 years. Our safety net programs remain stingy compared to those of our peer countries. And the cost of long-term care in the United States can bankrupt families. We need a comprehensive plan for aging well in America that addresses all of these challenges and more. To have real impact, the plan will need to eliminate the disparities that cut the lives of some Americans short while others live comfortably into their 90s and beyond. It must ensure affordable long-term care for older people who are ill or disabled, but also support us in staying as healthy as possible for as long as possible. And we need policies that support longer working lives and secure retirement income. We can do this. Too often, we operate from a scarcity mindset. This is the belief that supporting longer, healthier lives for older Americans will take from the resources we need for younger people, or that supporting young people is not connected with health later in life. But investing in our youngest citizens makes it more likely they will be healthier adults. And creating a better society for older people now lays a foundation for generations to come. Yes, improving our healthcare, income, employment, and long-term services cost money. But the less we invest now, the more we will spend later to care for people as they age. And the costs and benefits of those investments aren't just economic. A healthier and more financially secure second 50 means less physical suffering, less psychological stress, and more freedom to enjoy our final years. I'm Deb Whitman, and these have been five big ideas for my new book, The Second 50. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Deborah. That was Deborah Whitman with five big ideas from The Second 50, Answers to the Seven Big Questions of Midlife and Beyond. You might also like our book bite for Learning to Love Midlife, 12 Reasons Why Life Gets Better with Age by Chip Conley. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.